This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. As you probably know, leaders from around the world have convened today at the United Nations to talk about Earth, specifically how the planet's climate is changing and what human beings are doing to A, continue to make it worse, and B, come together to try and find a solution. Or not. A whole lot of young people around the world walked out of their classrooms and offices and took to the streets on Friday to draw attention to the problem, including many all over Greater LA.
I'm Alexandra Rafling. I'm 15, and I'm out here because, frankly, the state of our planet nowadays is absolutely terrifying. And I think if we all get out here and show that we are dedicated to providing a better future for ourselves and our children, our lawmakers will have no choice but to listen to us and vote in that favor.
I had a mental breakdown the other day because I'm like, well, what's the point of me doing anything in school? What's the point of me trying to be anything when I grow up if the world's going to die?
I'm here because I want my grandchildren to live on the earth that I'm living on today.
KCRW is participating in a week-long series of programming on the issue of climate change, and there have been some dire predictions about its impact in the coming years. Right now, we're going to talk about how the warming planet will affect us right here in Southern California in those coming years and decades. Alex Hall heads up UCLA's Center for Climate Science. Professor, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You bet. The climate is changing. We know that. Scientists, the vast majority of scientists on Earth, say the climate is changing, and a large part of that is a rising temperature. So how are Southern California temperatures going to change in the coming years and decades? How much warmer is it going to get?
Well, we've already seen significant warming in California on the order of a degree or two Fahrenheit over the past century, and we'll continue to see rising temperatures over the coming decades. By the mid-century, we should see temperature increases on average of 3 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit, and that has big implications for a lot of things, including heat extremes in Southern California.
How do we know that? How do we know temperatures? I mean, we know the temperatures have been rising in the past. How do we know that they're going to continue to rise?
Well, we know that when you increase greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, that leads to warming. And we know that greenhouse gases are increasing in the atmosphere due to emissions, due to fossil fuel burning. And we know that's going to continue to a large degree. And so we can then predict how that will impact temperatures by just asking the question, how much extra heat is trapped by those projected increases in greenhouse gases?
And the effects will be felt in different places in different ways, right? Like people along the coast aren't going to be as warm as the people inland, which is what we see right now.
Right. So in Southern California, we already have temperatures that are very different inland than near the coast. If you look near the coast, temperatures are typically cooler. There's a natural air conditioning that comes from the ocean, from the nice breeze that we get during the afternoon from the ocean. And that effect will continue to moderate temperatures very near the coast. But if you go even just a little bit inland, say even to downtown Los Angeles, you'll see pretty big increases in temperature and big increases in heat extremes.
So we're talking about several degrees over the course of decades. It doesn't sound like a whole lot, 1 degree here, 2 degrees there. It does mean that LA's average summer highs will be much hotter toward the end of the century, right?
Yeah. So if you look further it forward in time and you look at the end of the century and you imagine that we keep increasing greenhouse gas emissions as we have, you really see Los Angeles becoming a very different place. So the winters would become much more like the spring and fall that we have now, and the spring and fall that we have now would become much more like summer, and our summers would become something that we just don't have here in Los Angeles, something much closer to what Phoenix, for example, experiences during the summertime.
Phoenix is hot in the summer, as we know. Phoenix is also just today seeing a lot of flooding. Monsoonal rains that don't really happen in Phoenix very often. And I wonder, because we're talking about water as well, it's not just heat, it's water as well. And that's a big one for us here in Southern California. What does climate change mean for our water supply and the precipitation that happens here in these parts?
So climate change has huge implications for our water resources. We already live in a region that is semi-arid and is reliant on distant water sources for our supply of water. And those water sources are vulnerable to climate change. So, for example, if you look in the Sierra Nevada, where we get a lot of our water, We are projecting that warming would cause a huge decline in snowpack, probably something like a third of a decline in the snowpack by the end of the century. And that snowpack is a natural reservoir of water. And if we lose it, we lose that natural storage capacity. We also project a big increase in precipitation extremes, so bigger swings between very wet years and deeper droughts. And that also has big implications for our water resources because it's harder. It's going to be harder for us to get through these very dry periods and also harder for us to store water during the wet period so that we can make it through the next drought.
And when things are really dry, things go up in flames, right? Any kind of spark can cause a catastrophe.
And as your audience knows, I'm sure we've already seen a significant uptick in the intensity and size of wildfire in California. And that is primarily due to warming that we've seen already. And then in addition, the change in extremes and precipitation also has implications for wildfire because during wet years, you build up fuels for fire. And then during dry years, they dry out and are prone to burn. And if you increase the swings in precipitation between very wet years and very dry years, you're going to increase the amount of fuels that are available for fire. And you're going to decrease the moisture in those fuels during the dry periods. And that's going to lead to a larger fire.
And all those fires, of course, mean a lot of smoke. Air quality suffers in a situation like this as well, correct?
Right. So when there's a big fire, there's obviously a lot of smoke produced. And that has big implications for air quality. I think everyone who's been in Los Angeles during a big wildfire knows that the air quality goes down. And when the temperatures are warmer, too, we see a decline in air quality, whether or not we're in a fire situation, because a lot of the chemical reactions that lead to a decline in air quality are sensitive to temperature.
But it's also, when you talk about on a global scale, warmer temperatures mean ice sheets and places where there's a lot of ice melting very quickly. We're seeing it in Greenland. We're seeing it in Antarctica. And that means the sea levels will rise all around the globe, correct?
Yeah, so we're already seeing acceleration of melt in Greenland, and we're seeing signs that Antarctica is also beginning to melt. And if these ice sheets were to melt entirely, they would have a dramatic increase on sea level. So if Greenland were to melt, it would raise sea level by something like 7 meters. And if Antarctica were to melt, it would raise sea level by something like 70 meters.
Ugh.
And that has big relevance for California. So if you look at our coasts, we have certain parts of our coasts that are really vulnerable. In Southern California, the ports of LA and Long Beach are vulnerable to sea level rise because they're relatively low-lying. And those are very important parts of our economic infrastructure. Places like Marina del Rey are also low-lying and very subject to flooding. Our beaches are vulnerable because it's going to be much harder for us to replenish the beaches and maintain them. And we also have examples of cliff erosion.
And it's all happening, right? These are things that have happened already. We've seen a rise in sea level. We've seen erosion on the beach and on the cliffs and things like that.
Absolutely. We've already seen sea level rise significantly over the past century. That's due to the warming of the ocean waters. They just take up more room as they get warmer. And that's also due to the melting of glaciers and the drawdown of aquifers, which are bringing groundwater into rivers and streams and putting it into the ocean. All those things are contributing to the observed rise in sea level, and we expect those trends to continue.
You know, we started the conversation, Professor, with, you know, hearing from young people protesting the lack of action on global warming and climate change. What do you think we should be doing? I mean, what can we do to play our part in trying to turn this around?
Well, that's a great question. And I think the first thing that we have to do is acknowledge that we are part of bigger systems. If you look at decisions about energy, especially long-term energy planning, those are, to a certain extent, made at the national level. And we have to get involved in politics if we want to make those changes. We need political change in order for those changes to occur. So I think that's part of the answer, is to get involved. And it's great to see these young people demanding change, because I think that's a big part of what we have to do. Now, of course, there are individual decisions that can have an impact. If you look in Los Angeles, About half of our greenhouse gas emissions come from the transportation sector. So that points to us making better decisions about things related to transportation. It means supporting land use and urban planning decisions that would encourage biking and walking. So it means supporting higher density in areas where it makes sense. It means supporting the public transit infrastructure and using public transit when we can. We have an evolving public transit infrastructure that's getting better and better, which is great to see, but we have to support that. And it means that when you make a new vehicle purchase, you need to make sure that you buy either an electric vehicle or a plug-in hybrid. You know, you need to make sure that you're buying a car that does not or emits as few greenhouse gases as possible. About 8% of current vehicle sales are either EVs or plug-in hybrids, and that's been great progress, but that number is really too low. Everybody who purchases a vehicle now needs to be purchasing an EV or a plug-in hybrid.
By the way, you walk the walk, as it were. You're a bicyclist, right? You bike to work.
So I'm multimodal. I bike to work sometimes. I take the bus sometimes, and sometimes I drive my EV.
And so, I mean, these are things that all of us can do to mitigate what's going on with the Earth's climate and an ever-changing climate. I want to thank you, Professor Alex Hall, who heads up the Center for Climate Science over at UCLA. Alex, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And as we march our way out of here today, we are close to the finish line, the final 2 days of KCRW's UnDrive Pledge Drive, where we once again try to prove that typical long-form blah, blah, blah public radio fundraising is a thing of the past. But we really do need you to make this really successful, to step up and help us out and make what we do possible. Think of what it is that you listen to this radio station for each and every day, how you use KCRW. Put a dollar value to it. And help us out as we wrap things up in the next couple of days. We do have this challenge to report. If we can raise $35,000 by tomorrow night at midnight, your contribution will get matched dollar for dollar, courtesy of our KCRW board member, Sarah Kane. So thank you. And you'll be entered to win an unforgettable 5-day getaway for two to Sonoma. KCRW.com/join. And thank you. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for the ear and for your time. Have yourself a great day.